Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which believes great beer can be as exciting as great music. Since 1988, Goose Island has been committed to that belief by brewing new styles of beer like 312 Urban Wheat Ale, Sophie Farmhouse Ale, and Bourbon County Stout. Goose Island, to what's next? GooseIsland.com.
This is Sound Opinions, Jim, and it's a box set bonanza this week. Yes, it is. Ernie Isley of the Isley Brothers, they've got a huge box set out. We're going to talk to him in the show. And my Desert Island Jukebox is going to focus on a band that has just put out a new box set. That's later on in the show, but first we've got some music news.
That is Roar by Katy Perry. I know you're happy to hear that again, Greg. Why are we playing it? It is on a new Spotify playlist that allegedly has been drawn up by Hillary Clinton. I say allegedly because I just have a hard time imagining former Secretary of State, Senator, presidential candidate Clinton actually sitting down and coming up with this list. Somebody from the Clinton campaign put out a Spotify list. It starts with American authors. She's apparently very fond of American authors because they pop up on her list several times. Goes into gym class heroes, Katy Perry, Kelly Clarkson, Pharrell Williams. There's also some Ariana Grande on there, Sarah Bareilles. Really? This is what Senator Clinton listens to when she's jetting around campaigning? I don't think so. On the other hand, several times we have done stories about President Obama's connections to music. You know, we were rock critics here in Chicago. I met him once. He claimed to read me. I think he actually listens to music. The White House is also on Spotify, and they put out two playlists recently, one for the day, one for the night, apparently songs that the president wanted to listen to while vacationing on Martha's Vineyard. These are really good playlists, right? The day playlist begins, Ain't Too Proud to Beg by The Temptations. You know, some pretty deep cuts, right? Live It Up by the Isley Brothers. Memories Live by Talib Kweli, right? There is a song on this day playlist by a band that I was raving about just a couple of weeks on the show, Low Cut Connie. He's got Low Cut Connie, the President of the United States of America, on his playlist. Some lapses in taste. I don't want to be partisan here. There's some Coldplay. There's never an excuse, Mr. President, for listening to Coldplay, okay? On the night playlist, he's got John Coltrane, Frank Ocean and Beyonce, Al Green. Man, you know, whoever the next president is, I think, is going to have to reach hard into the record collection to top these playlists.
Bruce Springsteen with Born to Run, and speaking of presidential candidates weighing in on their favorite music, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, another contender for the Republican nomination, has weighed in with his favorite album of all time on the 40th anniversary of Born to Run. He says it's the greatest. He says it's his Desert Island jukebox pick, Jim. If he were on this show and he were forced to pick one album to take to the Desert Island, he says Born to Run would be it.
The governor of New Jersey does know that that's an album about trying to get the heck out of New Jersey, right?
Well, he seems to acknowledge that in this statement he put out. I can't believe he put out a statement about this, but this is what he said. He said, Bruce wrote of the places and the people I knew. He wrote about our hopes and frustrations. He gave voice to the suburban kids like me who were filled with dreams and doubts. He was one of us. Until, of course, he was on the cover of Time and Newsweek, and then he wasn't one of us anymore.
Well,
he was a rock superstar.
A bit of a difference between Bruce's politics and Governor Christie's.
Well, and then there's this thing about it's the most powerful rock album of my lifetime. It's my Desert Island disc. But just a few weeks ago, wasn't this the same guy who was asked by a radio host if he was forced to choose between two native sons, Springsteen and John Bon Jovi, he would pick Bon Jovi? You know, he came right out and said that. You know, I figured if he was going to pick a Desert Island disc, it would be Slippery When Wet.
You know, Greg, my native state has a lot to be embarrassed about.
Back it on up. Fill your cup up. Let's tear it up, up. You kick the dust up.
Kick the dust up.
Bar downtown, they got a line of people way out the door. $10 drinks, it's packed inside. I don't know what they're waiting for.
Greg, that's one of your new favorite acts, I know. It's Luke Bryan with a song called Kick the Dust Up from Kill the Lights. He is number one on Billboard's Top 200 album chart this week. From time to time, we like to take a look at the chart because it always surprises us. There's always music on there we haven't heard of. Yeah. There's always music we can't believe is on there. You know, Luke Bryan's rep is that he's the Nashville act that's breaking the mold, but it sounds like generic Nashville to me. At number two on the chart, He Just Won't Go Away, Ed Sheeran, that English singer song. This guy, how long? It's been like forever.
Yeah.
When's he going to get lost?
Forever.
Number three and number four, Greg, are two Dre-related projects. Compton, Dre's first album in forever, is at number three. And NWA's debut album, Straight Outta Compton, has shot up to number four for the first time since the late 80s, based on the strength of that biopic. And this is great. The Veriest Artists compilation, now 55, is at number five. Talk about a
55
franchise. 55 installments.
Editions.
Do you think anybody owns all 55? Would that be their like whole record collection?
Well, this is the answer to that like K-Tel compilation craze that occurred during the 70s, right?
I mean, those were good.
AM pop radio fans would love those collections. And for some reason, these records keep charting. I mean, people are still buying compilation CDs for some reason. Number six on the chart, Jim, you'll be happy to know that Team Adam from The Voice has given us a top 10 artist, Melanie Martinez. She was third season of The Voice. She was on Team Adam. She's a 20-year-old singer who
Adam's
is now
the
in the top 10.
Adam's the guy who does the Zit cream commercials,
oh,
right?
Does he? I wouldn't know. But I'm glad you do. Taylor Swift, new artist? I don't know this Taylor Swift person.
Been hanging out with
She's
Beck lately.
At number seven, 1989. There's another artist who just seems to own the top 10 for most of the last decade, really. We were happy to hear about the number 8 band in the top 10, though. You and I were both geeking out
on This is cool.
Venom, the new album from Bullet for My Valentine, a Welsh heavy metal band
that started out in the top 10.
Started
as a Nirvana cover band and then turned into this. We have to play a little of this.
A top 10 metal band. Yeah, there you go. Future R&B singer at the number 9. At number 10, another country act, Sam Hunt. And we should mention, Jim, that at number 11, Elvis Presley is back in the top 20. He's got a new postage stamp out. Of course, there is a new album, Elvis Forever, that is made available at the post office, and it has shot him back into the top 20 yet again.
Listening to Sound Opinions, and that is the 1977 song Voyage to Atlantis by the Isley Brothers, featuring that unmistakable guitar of our guest this week, Ernie Isley. The Isley Brothers began back in the mid-50s when brothers Vernon, O'Kelly, Rudolph, and Ronald Isley formed a doo-wop vocal quartet in Cincinnati. The group became a trio after Vernon died, and they scored huge R&B hits like Shout and Twist and Shout, later famously covered by the Beatles. If you've ever been to a wedding, you've probably danced to those tunes.
Shake it up, baby!
But the band has had a longevity that far surpasses every other 1950s act. They added two more brothers, Ernie and Marvin Isley, and by the late 60s, they were doing funk, they were doing disco, they were doing psychedelia. Huge hit singles like It's Your Thing became one of the most sampled artists, Greg, of the hip-hop era. The Isleys are now being honored with a massive 23-CD box. The RCA Victor and T-Neck album masters 1959 to 1983, and even that covers only part of their career.
A key part of the Isley brothers' ability to continually reinvent themselves was the addition of Ernie Isley on guitar, who wrote many of their most iconic songs. We're talking about like Fight the Power, Footsteps in the Dark, Harvest for the World. He had this very distinctive guitar style and tone that's been imitated by countless musicians in both R&B and rock. You know, an extension of what his mentor and friend Jimi Hendrix was doing in the 60s, Ernie sort of took that forward into the 70s and beyond. Ernie, welcome to Sound Opinions.
All right, now. Glad to be here.
Ernie, you were in the household in Cincinnati in 1959 when Shout, that classic early track from your brothers, was starting to be played on the radio. I mean, did you have any sense of what was going on in the family at that point?
Yes, because when Shout came out in 59, I was 7 years old, and nothing on the radio sounded like that. And it was a song that it seemed like everybody sort of gravitated to. Shout was a song that, you know, got everybody up dancing and had people's pulse racing. In Smokey Robinson's autobiography, he said he was always trying to write a song like Shout. Mm-hmm. Because when the Isleys did it, it would be a half hour to 45 minutes before anybody could follow them.
He could play again.
You know, it was that, yeah, so nobody wanted to follow them. And therefore, they became the closing act of the show. And that's, you know, closing behind Jackie Wilson or Sam Cooke because of this song.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because they do it and it's like, man, take no prisoners.
They were coming out of the doo-wop, you know, era. There was an element of that in that sound, and it was just, you know, gospelized and taken to this kind of fervor level. Seven-year-old Ernie Isley, did you know that you were going to be part of this group someday at that point?
I had hopes, but, you know, being a kid, you have to go to school first. And I didn't start playing an instrument until I was 12. And that instrument was drums. It was my first instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And I played my first live gig with my brothers when I was 14 in Philadelphia. Martha and the Vandellas were also on that show, and they didn't have a drummer, so I also played behind them. And in between the two shows, my oldest brother, Kelly, handed me $50 and said, go get a hot dog. And I'm like, wow. So I went through the backstage doors right virtually, you know, within 10 minutes of us being on stage, you know, and the air still buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
And I go through the backstage doors and there are girls my age that screamed at me like I was Justin Bieber. And I wanted to move to Philly. Because I did not get that kind of action in my school.
Yeah.
But that was the first taste of it for me.
So you start out as a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
You're sitting in once in a while with your brothers.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, they've got this other guitar player who's actually living in your house for a while.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
I think our listeners may have heard of him. This guy by the name of Jimi Hendrix.
Yes. I feel the rhythm. Shot us in my feet. Can't keep still, baby. I feel played unlike anybody, even then. When he was hired, they said, you know, man, you play well, but the guitar, you guys kind of scruffy looking. We're going to have to get you a new axe. What kind you want? And he's like, really? So yeah, what kind you want? Can I have a white Strat? They said, yes. And he was like, oh my God. They got him his first Fender. He came into the house. Ma, this is a new guitarist we just hired. He's going to, you know, be staying here for a little bit. Wound up being like approximately 2 years plus.
Wow.
in the house. Mm-hmm. Whenever he was playing and I heard him, I'd take my social studies book and I'd come out in the room, in the dining room, living room, wherever he was, and open the book. But I was not doing social studies. I was listening to him. And as I said, you know, I'm 11 years old. JFK's in the White House. And Jimmy is, nobody I ever heard played like that or plays like that. And so whenever I think about him, I think about the person. And I'm automatically 11 years old, between 11 and 13. And when the Beatles were introduced by Ed Sullivan in February of 64, I'm on the couch, and my younger brother Marvin's on the couch, and Jimi Hendrix is sitting between us. Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles. But there was no clap of thunder in our house.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Close your eyes, and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you.
Not too long after that, my brothers called a meeting a few days later, and they said, you know, this English group has changed everything. You know, it's going to change everything. I don't know what's going to go on with Fabian or Paul Anka or, you know, Connie Francis or Bobby Rydell. Or,
right.
Even Elvis himself. We understand that they, in their repertoire, they do Shout and Twist and Shout, which they later recorded. Mm-hmm. And he said, they got two guitar players, but we got Jimmy. And I looked over at Jimmy when he said that, and Jimmy was grinning from ear to ear.
Continue our conversation with Ernie Isley about the long career of the Isley Brothers in just a minute. Then we'll offer our take on the new album by Titus Andronicus. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.